Final hour, DDC, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick. We are ready for our man Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. We are. Tim, we had an interesting, we had a lot of fun on Friday for 4 hours of our show, kind of going bobbing and weaving in and out of this. People were texting in, calling in. So you're the perfect guy to ask this because you've hobnobbed with some big names, been around big name celebrities. And the question was, what was the biggest, most famous person you've ever been around and had a conversation with, you actually got to meet? Who would that be? And don't say Matt Hasselbeck. I mean, I know he's your brother and everything, but
I mean, I would either say, like how long of a conversation?
Well, we didn't really get into specifics. You don't, it doesn't have to be a long conversation. Just, you know,
I mean,
you
met. I mean, the easiest answer for me would be the President of the United States at the time.
Okay.
It would have been George Bush. But I could also say, like, I had a conversation with, former President Trump as well. I would say, like, a President of the United States, like, would be my answer to that.
Okay, that'll be tough to top.
Does that count? Is that
yes,
that good?
That's high level. That's
that
top.
Counts.
The President of the United States, like, do they, like, is that a higher, like, is that like a, I have a question, like a sports athlete or
yeah,
musician,
like Michael Jordan or
that's higher than
Oprah,
Charles Barkley, yes.
Movie star kind of guy, yeah.
So like presidents, like is, so like the other one is kind of a combo, and my wife Elizabeth was doing something this past week or a week prior, and it kind of came up. But, like, the two of us were invited to a state dinner at the White House, and it was at a time when the Queen was visiting the United States. So we met Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, and yeah, we're still wondering how we got an invitation.
Did you actually have a conversation with her, or said you just?
No,
just
I didn't have
hi?
A conversation with her. There's a lot of rules associated with that. Like, you're not supposed to like
look her in the eyes.
I might get some of this right. Like you don't initiate a conversation. She would have to initiate it first.
Oh.
And then I was in my 20s, I think, too. Like it was. Maybe I was in my early 30s. I was very unsure of what to do. So, like, a conversation, no. So that would not count.
Did you ever – you've always heard this story. Have you ever had anybody you encounter where they're like, don't look them in the eye? I've heard those stories before. Like,
no, it wasn't that. But, like, there were definitely some rules with that. I always think, like, the biggest thing for me I don't know. I mean, I think growing up around sports, and maybe I've said this to you guys before, you know, a lot of times, like back when we were a little kid, it'd be like, oh, hey, that's Mark Bavaro. And it was like, well, no, I mean, like he's friends with my dad, like it's Mr. Bavaro to me. You know what I mean? He was like a kid, you know, it was never. And so, I think, I don't know, I guess it was kind of how we grew up.
Who was the biggest name sports-wise? Have you met Michael Jordan?
I've not met Michael Jordan. Biggest name sports-wise? For me, it would have to be, like, somebody as a kid. Like, Larry Bird, for me, as a kid. I mean, because, like, the biggest name, I think you kind of make the argument, like, the biggest name in sports, at least if you care about football, would be, like, Tom Brady. But, like, he's a grade above me. You know, like, we had, been on opposing teams and things like that. So, like, I would never, you know, classify that. But, like, as a kid, like, the biggest deal, like, would either be Roger Clemens or Larry Bird.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Have you ever met Tiger Woods?
I have not met Tiger Woods.
Okay. Good stuff. All right, I want you to help.
Those good? Like, who are your guys?
Those are good.
I want to hear yours.
No, those are good. I mean, you know, this is –
Little Nicky, who's yours?
Oh, Little Nicky for sure. Oh, there's been plenty of encounters with Little Nicky.
I met Michael Jordan. That was mine.
Okay.
That's kind of got the I met Dr. J. You got me going as a kid. I got to meet Dr. J as a kid, which was pretty awesome. Shaking Dr. J's hand, that's an experience. That guy had like the biggest claws ever. Like he made the ball look like a tennis ball. Yeah.
I had Barry Sanders. I've met, and the one that we talked after we had the honor and the pleasure of actually doing a sit down for like 30 minutes here in Nashville with Jim Brown. And I remember at the time it was George, Willie and I, and Willie was asking Jim Brown questions second and I was last, and Jim Brown took exception to some of Willie's questions. And
one of them, you think I was going to challenge him with a second questionable question after he got after my first one?
He was really like, kind of getting after Willie, and I'm like next to ask him a question, and I'm like kind of peeing down my leg a little bit, like, oh man, like this is going south and I'm next. But it was still a very memorable day.
I'll give you another one that I didn't think of. Tim got me going with the kid. Pelé. I got to meet Pelé at the Pelé soccer camp way, way back.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. That's a big one. In some circles, that would be a big. I don't know if it's the queen.
On a global perspective for sports athletes, like.
That's up there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's up there.
Yeah, I got to meet Gene Simmons once. He was hitting on my wife right in front of me, so that was kind of cool, I think. Kind of cool, maybe, or awkward. I don't know. It was weird. Asked her for her number, but that was strange. But I did meet him, introduced him, you know, let him know that it's my wife. But anyway, help us with telling it, because there's been a lot of talk here, and I think we touched on this a little bit last week, Tim, but today's game is different than, you know, even when you played. I mean, every year, obviously every 5 years, I guess it changes. But what value, because it's not a coincidence, like all of a sudden, all this talk of certain players not being at OTAs, and then poof, magically, Derrick Henry workout videos are surfacing all over the place, which I never had any problem with. But people were questioning, why isn't Derrick Henry there? I don't get it. Why isn't he at OTAs? People questioning guys. Big deal, not a big deal. How do you feel about it as now being on this side of things and as a former player, not being at OTAs?
I think it depends on the guy, depends on how long he's been in the league, the reason why he's not around, the other leadership on the team. Like in terms of Derrick Henry having a good year or a bad year, him being there – I don't think is a big deal. You know, I'm basing that on experience in the league, the position he plays, how he plays it, all of that stuff. But if it's, you know, I'm not here because I'm angry about something, or, you know, you're going to get, you know, as little out of me until my deal gets done, or things like that. Yeah. Then I think those things can be harmful to your team. I don't know. I mean, here's what I would say. Like, there are advantages when guys don't show up because other guys get reps and they may need the reps because they don't get them during the year. And, you know, sometimes guys do a better job of training, you know, when they're away from the team and not, you know, in a city with a bunch of teammates and a bunch of distractions. So I really think it's a case-by-case scenario. You know, in terms of how big of a deal it is that the guy's not there. But ultimately, like, if you just were to say, okay, you want him there or not want him there, is it good or is it bad? Yeah, look, it's better to have guys around. And, you know, I guess you're starting to lay the groundwork for, like, that season's team to start to have just good chemistry and a good culture on it.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck. And, Tim, I've heard you in past interviews talk about how much you enjoyed working with John Fox at ESPN and his wisdom and things like that. I notice he's back in now as a senior defensive assistant for Frank Reich and the Colts. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think some guys are just football coaches, right? Some guys, you know, they want to do it, and I don't know the best thing. It's like, I mean, they'd rather than sitting on a boat fishing somewhere, they'd rather be coaching football. I think that's how John Fox is wired. He knows a lot of football. And I think I've said to you guys in the past, you know, I think we
we kind of cycle through coaches and the way guys get talked about on TV. You know, I think sometimes it's easy to forget, like, what somebody, you know, has accomplished. And I think, Willie, probably what I've said to you guys in the past is, you know, John Fox, you know, his track record as a head coach, you know, in terms of what he's done, like, one of very few coaches to ever take two, you know, different organizations to a Super Bowl. Obviously did it in Carolina and in Denver. And, you know, when you look at the quarterbacks that he's had throughout the duration of his head coaching career, you know, he was doing it oftentimes without guys that were the elite quarterback. And, you know, he kind of did things in a way of, you know, the old school way of, like, we're going to play tough defense. We're going to do our best to not turn the football over. And had a lot of success doing it that way.
What do you think he brings to a defense in particular? You know, the Colts already have a pretty good defense, but what do you think his wrinkle might be?
Yeah, here's what I think is interesting about him in terms of, like, what he gets head coaching opportunities because of his track record as a defense coordinator with the New York Giants and when they went to the Super Bowl against Baltimore. And, you know, he said one time to me, the interesting thing about getting an opportunity as a head coach, kind of earn that opportunity by being a defensive coordinator, but then you become a head coach and you're not sitting in that dark room devising a game plan to stop the opposing team. And he's like, you know, and truthfully, that's really one of the things I loved as a coach. And so I think there are elements where, you know, when he became a head coach, he didn't have the opportunity to do that stuff anymore. And just from talking kind of X's and O's with him, I think he missed that, you know, from his time as a head coach. So he's been in coaching for so long and knows defense so well that I think it's the little details of how you respond to opposing offenses' splits and how you're going to pass off coverages. And I mean, he's really a defensive backs coach, you know, at heart. And so, you know, I think those are the things that you'll see the real benefit and things of, you know, that he's able to do.
Tim, real quick, David Njoku, he wanted out. He wanted a trade. Instead, the Browns didn't trade him. They've kept him, and they've signed him to a four-year, almost $60 million deal. I've got to be honest, I don't really understand the fascination with him. It's not like he's ever blown us away. So what is the fascination with David Njoku?
Age and speed, you know, versatility. He's a more than willing blocker. And from, like, an explosiveness standpoint, you know, I'm just trying to think of guys that have been around here that we look at him. Like, I would say, like, remember Delanie Walker earlier in his career, and obviously he did a good job here, but, like, he was still so fast and explosive, and so matchup problems were real. I think you could say that Jonnu Smith, you know, is a guy that, like, created problems like that. But, like, David Njoku, probably faster, more explosive, those types of things. And so I think maybe some of the lack of production could be some injury history alongside, you know, quarterback play. But I would think that he's widely regarded around the league as a guy that could create a bunch of problems for defenses and create matchup problems.
Okay. I mean, Delanie Walker was behind Vernon Davis, and then he got his opportunity here, and he went, he went nuts.
Yeah, and so think about the opportunity, right? So, like, when he was signed, like, he hadn't – like, I think it was just obvious to everyone. Like, you look at somebody, and you're like, man, he creates separation. He's fast. He's explosive. Like, that's David Njoku.
Okay.
And so I think what you're kind of betting on is, like – you know, being able to get more production out of him with the way your roster is currently set at quarterback and receiver and, you know, how the coaching staff plans to use him. I mean, I think it's that. Look, tight end's the biggest matchup problem in the passing game, you know, in terms of guys that are going out to catch the football that you can create in the NFL just because of the size, strength, speed, you know, variable that you get, you know, going against smaller guys.
Tim, good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. Great stuff from him, as always, joins us every week on the program. We'll continue the discussion on the other side here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. I don't see a name on this text, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Says Cristiano Ronaldo paid for their gas. Like I said, I don't know who the name is, so I don't want to say his gas. Maybe been her gas. Paid for their gas one time when I saw him at a pump. Top that one. How about, like, and how did that happen? So you saw Ronaldo at a pump and he paid for your gas? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
Shane from Ashland City says on our text line that his biggest dumb moment is when he met Jake Long, 2008 first overall pick, offensive lineman. One of my first questions to him was, have you ever had to tackle Derrick Henry? And his response was, I play offense, so I don't tackle anyone. And then he just has the facepalm emoji. We'll continue to do that, by the way, on Fridays in the summer months. Just have a little fun, kind of weave it in and out on our show. We'll just have a random question like we had on Friday. We'll continue to do that through the summer months. And we got a ton of responses on Friday. It was a lot of fun with that. So we'll do it again this week as well. So you want to talk about a little MVP action.
Well, as you know, we get the information from time to time from Mr. Jimmy Shapiro. And I just noticed he's got another one that came out just a couple minutes ago about the odds and ends of the NBA Finals and the NHL Conference Finals. But this is one that caught my attention the other day. They actually have a list of the latest, and now I'm looking, there's so many ones from Jimmy, I get them mixed up sometimes. I got to find the right one. But he sent out one last week about the NFL, the favorite for NFL MVP. And it really surprised me who the number one guy was, the favorite at this point.
This upcoming season. The favorite to be the
and
NFL
I would
MVP.
I would bet that this is not unanimous among the betting sites, but on this particular betting site, this is what they had for right now.
Okay.
The favorite to win the NFL MVP.
You're bringing it up because it's not Mahomes.
It's not Patrick Mahomes.
It's not Tom Brady. So it's not those three.
They're all on the list, but there's a guy that they put ahead of all those guys as of today. Of course, it could change. It could change next week if they wanted to. I don't know what happens in the offseason.
I'm going to say JT, not Justin Timberlake, but Jonathan Taylor. Be my guess.
Interesting guess. That is not who the favorite is right now.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, he's going down in quarterback. It can't be Devontae Adams, right?
Nope. It is a quarterback.
Oh, it is a quarterback. Oh, then it's going to be Allen.
It is not Allen.
It's not Allen. Okay. Chargers?
That's correct.
Justin Herbert?
Justin Herbert, they had as the favorite.
Wow.
They had the favorite as Justin Herbert. I just thought that was an interesting one for debate. I don't know if they're just doing this to get everybody to go ooh and ah, and I thought it was relevant because the Titans play the Chargers this year, and that's a really interesting team that, as we know, probably should have made the playoffs along with the Colts and didn't. That last game against the Raiders, we all know the craziness of that situation. But I just thought that was noteworthy that they put him up there. Even if, you know, we can debate whether he is actually the favorite. But if he's the NFL MVP, that's a game changer in the AFC. Even if he's in the discussion. Do we think he's that good? Like he's really, really good. But they haven't had the postseason breakthrough that they're hoping to have. But when I throw that out there, how shocked are you?
I mean, to be the favorite, pretty shocked to be the favorite. On a list? No. Not shocked. There's no shock value at all. But to be the favorite, yeah. I would say that I'm pretty shocked.
Yeah. So we would I think you and I would I tend to agree that we would not take him. We wouldn't take that bet.
No. I would not put money on that, no.
But yet, you know, he's running a business, and he's got him as the favorite. That really jumped out to me.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised by that. But what
you're skeptical on that?
Yeah, oh, I am for sure. I mean, I know you're projecting, but I mean, how could he be the favorite? Honestly, like, how could he be the favorite? Again, on a list for sure. In that grouping of whatever your list is, let's say the top eight, okay, I get it. But
now we had the discussion last week of who are the tier one quarterbacks, and I think we didn't really bat an eye when he was put in that first tier, right? Even though they have not won in the playoffs yet. They haven't even made the playoffs since he's been the quarterback.
Yeah, true. Well, we all remember the last game of the season last year on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, the wacky, you know. And, you know, most people would say the reason they've not made the playoffs is not him.
No. Agreed. But it is the most glorified position. It does pay the most, and he has not led them to a playoff game yet. So he does still shoulder some blame, because if you're going to get praised, come on, you have to take some of the blame too. And yes, he's been really good. I guess what it tells us for sure is I think everybody should identify or can identify that is going to be the toughest division of football this year.
And the Titans play them. That's right.
That's exactly right.
So that's kind of why I brought it up. But that's a jump to me, where some people who are in the business of doing these things think that's a guy that's going to make another jump. So here's how it breaks down. They've got Justin Herbert as of today, or as of the end of last week, 11-2. Josh Allen is second. Mahomes third. Joe Burrow is fourth. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson at 16-1. Deshaun Watson at 18-1. Jalen Hurts 18-1. Now that one, I'm like, what? Jalen Hurts for the league MVP? That sounds crazy to me. Derek Carr 20-1. Stafford 20-1. Dak Prescott 25-1. Lamar Jackson 25-1. Kyler Murray 33-1. So I don't know what all this, how this all changes. By the way, the top Titan is Derrick Henry at 50-1. 5-0. 50-1.
Wow.
Tannehill, 150-1, if you're curious.
Oof.
And Matt Ryan, remember we had the discussion of Matt Ryan versus Ryan Tannehill? Matt Ryan, 33-1, whereas Tannehill is 150-1.
Wow. All right.
So remember, this is just one service, but I thought those were like, holy cow, this is the perception. Justin Herbert, the favorite to win the NFL MVP.
Another round of OTAs tomorrow. We'll have certainly some of that on the program. We'll come back and continue the discussion on the Titans. On the other side, DDC, ESPN 102.5, The Game. You know we're going to make our playoff predictions before the season begins. And I know we're sitting here on the last day of May, and that's a ways away. But this will go pretty fast. We'll be getting through the summer months, and we'll be doing that. And I'm just here to tell you right now, and we were doing the tiers, And then just hearing what you just said. Remember we had the discussion about Matt Ryan and Ryan Tannehill? Well, clearly Jimmy Shapiro and his group, they don't think they belong in the same category. Matt Ryan, would you say 33-1 and Ryan Tannehill 150-1? Does that sound like two quarterbacks in the same tier?
Well, a lot of it has to do with your supporting cast, too. But, yeah, I think that's pretty telling. Carson Wentz is only 100-1.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield is 100-1. How is that?
I don't know.
How is he even on the chart?
Right.
We don't even know what team he's going to be on.
And that says a lot. And they've got Ryan Tannehill 150-1 and Baker Mayfield 100-1? Wow.
Yeah, explain that. That's weird. Christian McCaffrey 100-1. Jimmy Garoppolo, we don't know what team he's going to be on. 150-1.
What was Kirk Cousins?
Kirk Cousins is not listed.
Not listed.
Not listed. Oh yeah, you see, I'm sorry, he is 40-1.
I was going to say
Kirk Cousins.
I was like, wait a minute.
I looked the wrong way. I assumed he was down in that same kind of batch of people, but he's considered a lot higher. 40-1. Come on.
See what I mean? Like, going back to one, didn't they have Matt Ryan below? They had them in a tier below, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Then Ryan Tannehill and Kirk Cousins. Like, and I said, that's ridiculous. There's no way.
This was Mike Tannenbaum, for those that didn't hear the discussion last week. This was Mike Tannenbaum's take on who falls into what tier. He had his own definitions. Your guess of Jonathan Taylor, 66-1. Mm. He just doesn't have these guys. They just don't have a lot of non quarterbacks in this. But Jalen Hurts at 18-1 jumps out at me. It's like, what is going on? There's no
absurd.
Way.
Absurd. You talking about wasted money? That's wasted money.
Yeah.
You bet on that. Come on. 18-1 because they got AJ Brown.
I guess, in part. Like Myles Garrett at 250-1, I would take a flyer on that.
Agreed.
Way before I would take Jalen Hurts or several of these guys.
Yep.
You know, the overwhelming odds say that a quarterback's going to win the MVP, but if Myles Garrett were to have a dominating season, there are great defensive players that get momentum and get a vote like that.
I wish the NFL would just wake up and again, this goes to this discussion we've had for
right.
years.
Right, separate a quarterback
just
from everybody
separate
else.
Them.
Yeah,
just separate them. Give the other positions they matter to. Get right. I don't know what we've talked about. I think we gave suggestions. You know, call it the Archie Manning. I don't care. Call it whatever you want. Johnny Unitas. I don't know. Figure out something. Steve Young. I don't know. Call it whatever you want. A quarterback award. Who should it be, by the way, if you were to name it a quarterback? Who should it be?
Joe Montana.
Okay.
Just throwing out a name.
I got
or
no
Johnny
problems
Unitas.
With that.
I would go with either of those.
Okay.
Those would be two good ones.
Just call it that and have a quarterback award, an MVP quarterback award, and let it be just as prestigious as the other ones, but then have the other MVP. Everybody else, give them a chance where it just feels like every year, no matter what you do, you got no chance if you're not a quarterback. You got no chance. Basically, all the quarterbacks would have to fall on their face and have average years for somebody to rise up and win the award, you know? It's silly. So we are getting a little bit closer to training camp. And what do you think right now is going to be the number one topic? What would be a topic that you would like to discuss? Because I'm going to tell you something that has jumped out at me that I think is going to be vitally important. And we've talked about the hire, but you do wonder, if the offense struggles this year, how much attention is going to turn to the OC? It was a big discussion piece last year. Don't you think it's going to be even bigger this year? Because he was already a question mark, right? It was already like, don't know about this. And then their offense just plummets on his watch. Now, I'm sure they would defend and say, well, this happened, and Derrick Henry went down, and this happened, and da-da-da. I get it. look, you can't. There's no escaping. The people had questions about the hire, and then, you know, taking over for Arthur Smith, and then everything goes way, way down. Look, it's got to look different next year, the first, let's say, month of the season, or you can imagine how much attention there's going to be on the OC position. Because I think, by the way, Shane Bowen's kind of slid out of that discussion piece, right? Nobody's really talking about that anymore.
Sure, and they did all summer last year.
Right, but now it's on Todd Downs.
That's in the distant rear view.
Yeah.
The whole, hey, why isn't he named the defensive coordinator, all of these things. That was a very popular criticism. I would just say, show me an offense that's struggling, and I'll show you an offensive coordinator that's getting some heat. It just goes with the territory. I always try to say, okay, what are the circumstances? Are there a lot of injuries? Are there a lot of unexpected curveballs that got hit? That's how I would say things unfolded last year. Now, was it unpredictable? No, because you had to know when you made the deal for Julio Jones that it was a gamble, that he could stay healthy, and they lost the gamble. He was never healthy. It never worked. And that was a tough thing. That's out of the control of the offensive coordinator. Now, this year, he's been dealt a totally different hand. Right? You're now starting off with brand new receivers. Guys weren't even there last year in a lot of cases that you're hoping take the number one, number two roles. You've got changes in the offensive line. You've got Derrick Henry coming back. There's challenges for that. But all that being said, there's no doubt about it. This is just how fans work. If they don't do well, there will be attention focused on the offensive coordinator.
But you'd have to admit, you can't get a pass whenever.
But is
none
it John
of those
Robinson?
Things were in question last year.
But is it John Robinson or is it the offensive coordinator? If Treylon Burks and Robert Woods don't pan out for whatever reason, then how much do you put on the offensive coordinator?
Well, last year he had A.J. Brown and he had Julio Jones and he had Ryan Tannehill. And Ryan Tannehill,
what, did he have
the worst
him?
Numbers.
He didn't always have him, did he?
Right, but he had the worst numbers he's had since he's been the quarterback. A.J. Brown didn't have the year that everybody was expecting. I get it, he was banged up. And Julio Jones obviously was a flop. Like, you have to shoulder some of that. And, by the way, I get it, they lose Jonnu Smith, so you can attach that to the GM. They decided not to re-sign him, and the tight end position became completely irrelevant last year. Like, some of that has to fall on the lap of the offensive coordinator, right? I mean, you can't just chuck.
I thought there were a lot of circumstances. Now, Todd Downing, he comes in. When Derrick Henry was healthy, they were doing really well. You know, he was doing real well, but there were some games where they couldn't protect the quarterback. Taylor Lewan's coming off of an ACL. A.J. Brown was in and out playing hurt. Julio Jones was out more than he was in. So you never really had much continuity. So I always tried to keep that in perspective as the season unfolded. Just pick a week at random, and you take a look. There was probably some circumstances where they were not with their full allotment of weapons. And I would say when they did have everybody, they looked pretty darn good offensively.
Yep. Quickly, and then we'll come back and wrap up Tuesday's edition. Nate votes for Joe Montana. Eric in Bellevue votes for it to be the Dan Marino Award. Okay, I like that. Unnamed texter says, actually, a couple of texts on this. They're waiting for Brady to retire to then call the award after him. And then another texter says the Tom Brady Award, or do they call it the GOAT Award? So there you go. Some votes for Tom Brady when he retires, and who knows when that's going to be. We'll come back. Put a bow on Tuesday's edition of the DDC next. You brought up SEC meetings in Destin, Florida. Do you know what I've been seeing, what everybody, a lot of people have been talking about? Yes, little Nicky talked about, you know, the little ongoing feud with Jimbo. And I didn't say they were doing anything wrong.
And he did.
Probably beat the podium. But I've seen a lot of people tweeting out the SEC seeding chart. Did you see this? A lot of people are discussing where they placed everybody, the coaches, in the room. Did you see this? It's pretty funny. So, you know, they've got one side of the table, this big table. So just picture a big Thanksgiving table. And on one full side, they've got, you know, like Greg's, you know, the commissioner, Greg Sankey, and David Cutcliffe, who is now, you know, working in the SEC offices. William Keane, Mark Womack, John McDade, Herb Vincent. He's been there for a good while. So that whole group on one side, you know, basically the SEC officials. Well, do you know who was right in the middle of the SEC officials? Jimbo Fisher. And then they've got all the coaches on all the other sides of the table. But Jimbo Fisher right in the middle of the – so I guess they wanted to keep him, I guess, as far away from – although he doesn't have Little Nicky that – they don't have Little Nicky that far away. Little Nicky was on the right-hand side with Sam Pittman, Brian Harsin, and Billy Napier. That was on the right side of the table. On the left side of the table was Shane Beamer, Heupel, Clark Lee. How about that? They put Heupel and Clark Lee together and Dunlap. And then on the other side, Drinkowitz, Leach, Kiffin. Oh, gosh, they had Leach and Kiffin right next to each other. Oh, my. Bet that was interesting. Brian Kelly, Stoops, and Kirby Smart. It still is weird to see Brian Kelly in the SEC, isn't it? I haven't gotten used to that.
Welcome to the club. Yeah.
I know. It's just weird. But a lot of people commenting about them putting Jimbo Fisher not over there on any of the sides of the table with the coaches, but in the middle of all the SEC officials. I wonder if he asked for that. Maybe that's like security. I don't know. Or are they punishing him? I don't know. I don't know what they're punishing him for, but pretty interesting. I don't know what they're going to get accomplished with the spring meetings, but a lot of people commenting on the seating chart, which was a lot of funny. That was a lot funny. Anyway.
I got a couple news and notes, Darren.
Okay, news and notes.
A couple news and notes before we get out. One, congrats to Vanderbilt's golf team. They had the national champion individual yesterday, the freshman that we talked about earlier. Today, they advanced to the Final Four as a team. They beat Texas Tech in the quarterfinals. They will play Texas tomorrow in the semifinal. So going for a national championship after yesterday, they took the individual national championship. So congratulations to them. Of course, Gordon Sargent is the guy that won yesterday. Also, congrats to Kara Hammer and her husband Dustin Kissling, baby girl.
All right, congrats.
Remy Wynn Kissling, born May 29th. I got to see a picture, and she posted it on her Twitter. So you may have noticed Kara's appearance. In fact, it was funny. There was a moment where Ryan Johansson, somewhere along the line where she started to show during the course of the season, he goes, "Hey, do you have a bun in the oven?" She was like, duh. It's kind of funny behind the scenes.
You have to be careful with that.
Dangerous game.
I've seen a lot of people get in trouble with that.
I know. But this is just – she laughed. It was a funny moment behind the scenes.
Congratulations
to Kara and Dustin. That is awesome.
That's awesome. Let's sneak in Dylan from Antioch real quick before we get out here on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call real quick there. But, yeah, you guys got me thinking. I never really thought about this. You know, they go off and hire Tim Kelly in the offseason to be the passing game coordinator. And can you just picture Vrabel like, yeah, it's going to be great. You're going to have AJ. You're going to make him a bigger weapon than he already is now. You know, and then – boom, AJ's gone, and you end up with a possibly out-of-shape first-round pick in Nick Westbrook-Akina. So, hey, Tim Kelly's going to have to earn his paycheck this year. And I just thought that was funny. But anyway, okay, you guys have a great day. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Dylan. You too. Tim Kelly has been, you know, has been hired to be the passing game coordinator. So what effect can he have on all of this? And that also is a part of the layer that I'm throwing out there, because, you know, people will connect that dot, right? Because of where he came from, he's already worked with Vrabel, and if things don't get better.
And the expectations are high. You're walking in trying to get him over the top, and it's not going to be easy. A lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure indeed. That will do it for our show today. T-Mace will be in the saddle with us tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Everybody, enjoy the rest of this gorgeous Tuesday here in Middle Tennessee. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. We shall see you then.